Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Macro Monthly Podcast on the UBS Market Moves Podcast channel. Each month, we do hear from top investment professionals from UBS Asset Management's multi-asset team. Joining us for today's conversation, glad to welcome our speakers, Evan Brown, Portfolio Manager and Head of Multi-Asset Strategy, as well as Fatu Conte, Multi-Asset Investment Specialist. So with that, Fatu, I will pass it over to you to lead today's conversation with Evan. Welcome back.
Thanks, Dan. This is an election year, so which we'll get into in a bit, but it's certainly a time to feel the spirit of patriotism, if any. And today we'll cover our latest macro views, particularly reflecting what's happened thus far this year, as well as how we've gotten to where we are today, our outlook for the remainder of the year, and then how we're positioned in our MAP portfolio. So we'll jump right in and start with you, Evan. Normally we begin by talking about what's currently going on in the economy, but since we're halfway through the year, let's push things up a little bit differently and take a step back. So can you start by summarizing the state of the U.S. economy thus far and where we are now?
Absolutely, and thanks Fatu and Dan. So, we'll start with where we were just coming into this year. And in the second half of last year, growth was just booming. The second half GDP for 2023 annualized was running about 4%, which is almost or about double the trend for the U.S. economy. And at that time, inflation was coming down sharply too. And these are actually related because inflation was coming down sharply was boosting the, real wages or the inflation adjusted incomes of consumers, and that was supporting their consumption. So that was coming into this year. And over the course of this year, we've been in the process of moving from that booming economy to more of a trend-like one. So getting closer to 2% or so real GDP growth. We did have an inflation surprise in the first quarter of this year to the upside, but it's now looking a lot more like just one-off kind of price resetting at the beginning of the year, some residual seasonality that is now washing out. And the last couple of prints on inflation have shown that that disinflationary process that had begun last year has now resumed. So where we are now, we're overall growth and inflation are cooling, gently, I'd say, which is what the Fed wants to see to feel good that inflation ultimately is heading back to their target.
Thanks, Evan. And you mentioned a slowdown in the U.S. economy. What are some of the concerns that you have with regards to that, if at all?
I'd say we have some concerns, but we're not overly concerned. We are an environment where the economy is slowing. So whenever that's the case, there is a risk of something breaking and there being a nonlinear rise in unemployment and ultimately a recession. So you're obviously a little bit more concerned about the world when you're slowing than when you're accelerating. But we take a lot of comfort in the fact that household balance sheets really never been this strong in terms of household wealth to disposable income. So the U.S. consumer, and yes, there's some soft spots, the lower end of the income distribution, but in aggregate, just has plenty of wealth, plenty of untapped home equity, for example, which we think can sustain consumption for a good while longer, and incomes, overall income growth, while cooling off somewhat, is still running at a quite healthy pace. With the slowing, I mentioned that this is something the Fed wants to see. They obviously don't want us to slow too fast, but with this gradual slowing, we think that the Fed is going to be able to get ahead of the curve. And it's really inflation resuming its downtrend that's allowing that. You're seeing recent comments from Chair Powell, both at the ECB Centro conference last week and just today in front of Congress, acknowledging the cool down in growth and saying, you know, inflation is not the only issue here, and we need to, you know, the risks are a little bit more balanced. And so it's he's kind of leading the market if the data turns out as the Fed expects and broadly we expect with the ongoing progress in inflation, that they should be able to start easing in September. And so in that environment, even if earnings growth disappoints a bit amid a bit slower growth, you know, what really matters is the investor faith that the cycle will be extended. And it's the Fed laying the runway with rate cuts is core to that, and we think we're going to get it.
The election is pretty much top of mind for a lot of investors, specifically because of the fact that we just had our first presidential debate. And so what are the key policy differences between the two parties, policies and its potential impact on market performance?
Sure. So, you know, the first thing, obviously, we're all watching the news and many of us watch the debate and the aftermath. And so there's still a little bit of uncertainty on who the Democratic candidate will be, whether it will be President Biden or Kamala Harris or someone else. But I think, you know, we broadly know what the policies are going to be in any case. And I think those policies are more of a status quo. You know, there might be an inclination for the Democrats to increase corporate taxes and to invest more in green energy and the like. But that's very unlikely to happen just because the Democrats are likely to lose the Senate. There are a number of seats held by Democrats that happen to be up for grabs this year and more what you'd call purple states, right? Or even red leaning states. And so those seats are vulnerable. And so it does seem likely that the Republicans are going to take the Senate. And if that's the case, then, you know, whoever the Democratic candidate is probably going to be limited in terms of what they can, get through Congress. So more of a status quo. Under President Trump, were he to win the election, I mean, that's certainly some major shifts in policies, you know, on the plus side for markets, tax cuts and deregulation, creating a more complicated environment would be a significant rise in tariffs, you know, on China, but also much of the rest of the world, and lower immigration, which might limit potential growth and unwind some of the cooling in labor markets that we've seen, and lead to a decline in labor force participation. So, you know, market performance in a Trump win depends a lot on whether the Republicans take not just the Senate, but the House as well, whether they take, whether it's a GOP sweep or a red sweep. In that scenario where Republicans have the presidency and Congress, biases that you see the S&P 500 and U.S. stocks go higher on the tax cuts, although, you know, a rise in yields from, and when I say tax cuts, I mean a full extension of Trump's original tax cuts. But in that scenario, you're going to see a rise in yields as well. That's likely. So that might undermine, that might limit some of the upside for U.S. stocks. But the one thing that we do know is regardless of whether the Republicans win, the House of Representatives or not, and broader Congress, is that tariffs are going up a lot under Trump. So, you know, we do think that a President Trump victory means the dollar goes higher against most, you know, any country that exports heavily to the U.S. and is likely to face risks of tariffs on their exports.
Great. And speaking of elections, France also just went through a few rounds of elections themselves. How did the market react to that? And then more broadly speaking, does this impact our view at all in the euro area?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of volatility in French politics. You first had the European-wide parliamentary elections where the National Rally Party, Le Pen's party, right wing, really surprised to the upside. That prompted Macron to call an election. And you had a couple of rounds. And then the second round of the French election, the big surprise, the question going in was, okay, how much will the National Rally win by? Will they just have a majority of seats, or will they have an absolute majority in Congress where they could get a lot more aggressive policies done that would really lead to a deterioration in the fiscal situation in France? And the big surprise over the weekend was actually that the left-wing parties won the election, and the right-wing National Rally came in third place. Macron, the centrist, came in second. But the left-wing did not have enough for an absolute majority either. So what you have is a hung parliament, just not much going to get done, which, you know, in all honesty is a good thing, right? Both the far right and the far left had very expansionary fiscal plans. Now it looks like neither party will be able to get any of that through what will be a very divided parliament. So we expect the noise around European politics to calm down. We still like what's happening economically in Europe, where inflation is coming down. That's allowing the ECB to cut. That's improving real income, supporting the European consumer. And global manufacturing is still in this process of healing and inflecting higher. And that's helping with the more manufacturing and export heavy economy in Europe than in the U.S. So still liking Europe from an economic point of view.
Evan, very insightful session. I think I speak for all of the listeners when I say this has been pretty insightful. And with that, thanks everyone for listening in.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.